Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello and welcome to episode 29 of the Create More podcast. On this week's episode, I am talking to Deborah Stevens of Dramatic Training Solutions. Now, Debs is someone that I've known, we worked out in the podcast almost 10 years, someone who does these really fascinating kind of, they're described as team building exercises, and they're very interactive. They have actors, you do personality testing. We talk all about this in the podcast. And it's been so instrumental in kind of how I've developed the last 10 years. And I think it's really important. The bigger the team, the more fun and engaging these are and the more interesting they are, especially when the team dynamics are really exciting. She's also just released a book called Stand Out, 5 Key Skills to Success. It's really, really interesting. And we talk lots about what it's like to write a book, all of the things she's learned, what's been fascinating about the whole process. And she's just such a nice person to talk to. And she's always so generous with the time. So enjoy the episode and listen to the end to find out who's on next week's podcast. Enjoy. I should say, I'm going to start the podcast by saying, hi, Debs, thanks for coming on. Are you aware that the last time we spoke was almost exactly a year ago when you came on my other podcast?
Is it really? That was a long time ago. Lots happened then.
Does that not feel crazy to you? There's no way it's been a year. That was, so the last time we spoke was just after lockdown had happened.
Yep. Oh my goodness. Well, a lot has happened. A lot of water under the bridge.
We've had
a whole year ago. My God, I thought it was longer, actually, to be honest with you. There you go.
We've had what, pandemics, recessions, we've had political upheaval, riots, we've had the whole lot. And I think what's interesting is I guess you are a people person. You go around and you talk to lots of people person to person. Yeah. So to suddenly be forced into a kind of zero physical contact business has been a big transition for you. Why don't you give people a bit of background on what you do, and then why don't you explain to us kind of like how you've transitioned, I guess, over the last year?
Yeah, well, you're right. Actually, my job is people and working with people, and we do experiential training. That means learning through experience. So you actually have to do something. It's immersive. We use professional actors. So it's all very visual, very sort of like connected, and always face to face. And I'll be honest with you, I've literally got myself recorded saying, we'll never do anything virtual because we are a face to face training company. And love what we did, traveled all over the world. I've been to 79 different countries. I do. And then, of course, when the pandemic hit, I've been doing this business for 26 years. I had that moment of quite sick, fear, what we can't do this any other way. But isn't it funny how resilient we are as people? Because within 6 weeks, first of all, I sort of reached out to my customers and offered free training, basically. I just said, look, let's just do something. Let's do anything I can to help you. And we did it on Zoom. And I thought, actually, this works. And then 6 weeks later, I was doing my business virtually. Little bit at a time, it grew, I got better, thank goodness, because it was pretty dire at the beginning. But the great thing about it is, because we use actors, of course, it's like watching TV. So You can absolutely do what we did, because it's like on screen. So it works really, really well. But
well, I think that's, so I guess as a bit of backstory, the first time we met actually was many, many years ago on, I want to say maybe almost 10 years ago. And I was a young whippersnapper. I was new to the world of architecture. And what was really cool is, I think the reason I'm excited to do this podcast with you is that what you talk about is something that I'm genuinely fascinated with. And I think people skills, interpersonal people skills, you use a Simon Sinek quote that it's not soft skills, it's human skills and hard skills. And that was one of the things I loved in the book that you wrote was, which we'll come on to a bit, is, yeah, it's a super important part. And it wasn't until I first met you, which was on a training course day, where we were on quite a, it was quite an argumentative site issue. You know, we were with contractors. There was a lot of like big problems going on. And what was really cool is the practice I worked at the time, Make, they were kind of forward thinking enough to say, well, how can we train all our part ones, part twos, new architects, in like not argumentative skills, but understanding how to operate in the heat of an argument. And also the other half of it was how we as a team could talk, like an internal team as well, because and I'm just setting the scene here that we were the first kind of big team at the office who'd moved to a site, and we kind of lived as this little family. And you know, like any family, you know, there's like trials and tribulations you go through. And we brought, you know, you guys came in with actors, and we did a day-long kind of workshop of first interpersonal skills about how we could learn more about each other, and then we did role-playing in the afternoon, which was you guys taking on the roles of like argumentative contractors who were just purposely trying to annoy us. And I still remember that feeling of one of your actors really getting under my skin as a contractor, and you were like, time out, time out, that's not how you should respond. And it was really, really good fun. And since then, I've always been fascinated the process that you've gone through, which isn't something that architects traditionally are taught. I mean, I'm assuming you work in loads of different professions. Architecture is not the one that you do. How wide a range do you work with?
Yeah, we work with lots of different types of companies. So we work with companies in hospitality. So we've done a lot of work with, not so much at the moment, with travel companies like Royal Caribbean and some of the airlines. We've worked in banks. So some of the top banks like Royal Bank of Scotland and Coca-Cola, and yeah, a lot of big huge educational company that supplies global education all around the world to all different types of schools and universities. They're companies that care about people, and they care about how their people interact and collaborate with each other, as well as external contacts. That's sort of the glue, really.
I think it's a fascinating, okay, so how can I say this without incriminating anyone? It's interesting, the people who engage with the process that we've been through and people who don't engage. And ironically, it's normally the people who don't engage are the very people who really do need to engage in this process. Because what happened, I guess it's really fun for you, and it must be fascinating. I guess one of the reasons you stuck with it even during the pandemic, you know, when you're really pushed to the, like, push the limits, do you still stick with the thing that you love doing? And that is, I guess, the process of watching people learn and understand a bit more about themselves. And I would say as well, a big kind of thank you that, I guess the reason I like doing this podcast, quite a personal podcast to me. So when we did this originally, going back to this very original project as on, I don't know if you remember, but, you did the ENFJ. No, like, are you like introverted, extroverted? You did the four. Yeah. Well, explain that as a brief concept to them.
Well, if I remember rightly, you were an ENFP. So you've got four different dichotomies. So you've got the introvert versus the extrovert. So obviously, this is about energy and the focus of the energy that we have. And a lot of people think introverts are shy and extroverts are confident, which is absolutely not the case. You get shy extroverts, you get shy introverts. But what you do, the difference is that introverts are much more introspective. So they like to think before they speak, and extroverts will speak their thoughts. So people like me and you, we've just, you know, we're doing the right job, aren't we, if you think about it? Because we speak our thoughts. But, you know, this is where there's sometimes clashes, because we can, if we're not careful, we can use all the introvert space up, not let them speak. So there's that. And then there's the sensing and intuition, which is around taking in information, and the senses like detail and concrete and sequential, and the big picture, like exactly that big picture, concepts, ideas. And you can see how that wouldn't marry up if you were like working together. And then the one that causes most conflict is the thinker feeler, how we make decisions. So feelers make it from their gut and thinkers make it from their head, but it also affects how we can take on feedback and how we interact with people, because feelers are much more about harmony. Thinkers are much more about fairness, and there can be all sorts of conflict around that. And then finally, there's the organized versus the adapting. So organized, obviously, planned step. They like to know happening, when it's happening, and they like a finish. Whereas the adapters are much more go with the flow. It's emerging. The ideas come late, always up against it in a deadline, but, you know, more creative at that point. And it's not that it's wrong. Either one is wrong. It's just about difference. And that's the key thing. If we understand each other's differences and can appreciate those things and respect them, we actually start to fill in the bits of the jigsaw puzzle for each other. And it's fascinating watching people learn that and adapting. And actually, a lot of partners, you know, husband, wives, partners, boyfriends, girlfriends, all that, a lot of them are really, really different. Really, normally are often opposites attract.
And are you and your partner,
funnily enough, no. he's a thinker, I'm a feeler, but it's the same. But that's more difficult in a way, because you find yourself, you know, wanting to be yourself, but you have to adapt. You can't just leave children to get their own packed lunches in the morning, for instance, and hope they get to school on time with a packed lunch. Someone's got to take that organising role. And you can have all sorts of issues that way too. But yeah, interesting stuff.
Because I think the reason I really enjoyed it was that, and I don't know if you remember this, was that I was in a team of six, and when we were asked to fill out this, it was like all of the introverted detail people go to the right and all of the extroverted feeler people go to the, and it was just me and our head of human resources
<That's it. laughs>
on one side and all the rest of my team on the other. And I still to this day like remember that. So you know, remember 10 years ago, I remember thinking, I'm not meant for this. You know, like I'm an odd one out. I like, why am I so different to everyone else in the way they thought? Yeah. Anyway, and then you then kind of fast forward maybe 8 years later. When did you work last time? It was maybe two and a half years ago or something.
Yeah.
And we did the same process again, didn't we?
Yeah.
But with a much larger team of like, I think it was 10 or 12 or whatever. And again, it was the same personality traits that kind of popped up that I was like so far one end. And everyone was like giggling that I was so far. Like, I think one of the questions was, do you turn like serious work into play? And I was like, no, I think I'm quite serious. And everyone on my team was like, you need to go right down the play end. And I was like, oh, yeah. Man, I can't ignore my skills. But it's funny that as I've got closer to kind of, I guess, upper management or running teams, the more beneficial that those skills have come.
Yeah.
And I'm really glad that I've had to become a bit more hardened to being called the kind of fun odd one out in that, because architecture is not traditionally, doesn't have a lot of people like me, you know, like I always feel a bit like an odd one out. And one of the things I loved about reading your book, which I will come on to a second, is that a lot of the things, the soft skills that are going to become more beneficial, maybe I need to stick onto these, and maybe, you know, these are really good skills. So yeah, you've been a key component in that, like the Ben Stewart trail of progression last 10 years. But I want to come onto your book. So you have just released a book. When did it come out? Yesterday? No, week.
I got my copy yesterday, but it actually was published on the 3rd of March. But like everything, there's been so many issues with distribution and stuff. It's been a bit late, actually, being into the, you know, the bookshops, online bookshops. But yeah, it's out now anyway.
So this seemed like I wanted to have you on anyway and have a chat anyway. And then the book was coming out. So it's too perfect. So the book is Standout. Yes. It's 5 key skills to advance your career. So why don't you tell us a bit about the book? And then I've got a million questions to ask you.
Okay. So the book is all about how we can stand out as humans. So it's about the 5 key human skills that of a lot of the research that I did and a lot of the reports that have been written about the future of work are saying are going to be key skills that we're going to need in the future to thrive and survive in the workplace. Because as automation and AI kicks in, and it's kicking in quicker than it ever would have done because of the pandemic, as that kicks in, the idea is that we will complement machines, robots, for want of a better way of calling them. We will complement them because they will do the thing you don't like doing. They will do the, you know, is boring, but it certainly is for me anyway, in my personality type. They will do those things, and we'll be allowed to get on with the things that we really enjoy. Like if you're in hospitality, for instance, connecting with customers. If you're in retail, you know, creating a customer experience. Even if you're in IT right now, you're going to need these skills, because IT people in the future will be much more around interacting with people and helping people out. So So the book I wrote is a sort of masterclass in how to improve those skills. And I think it's about, because we've, a lot of us have lost them because we've started to become human robots. And that's, we've got lots and lots of tests to make sure that robots don't become human. But have we got a test for humans to make sure we don't become robots? Because with all the processes and all the digital devices we've got, we are losing our ability to connect and our ability to socialize, our ability to listen.
It's because as I was reading it, it was just interesting to me that, like, right now, how many people have 100% been across Zoom calls, you know, like no physical contact. And also that a lot of people might not be comfortable with doing this Zoom chat. Like, it happens to just completely be in my skill set to want to and actively love doing this. But for a lot of people, they hate doing this across Zoom, you know, it's like terrible for them. And then, you know, suddenly being given that as a challenge. And I think the book's really well timed in, everyone's had a lot more time to think, a lot more time to be on their own, and a lot more time to be in their own head. And actually, I don't know about you, but like dog walks or anything, you know, you listen to podcasts, audiobooks. I've just become obsessed with audiobooks, and particularly on this kind of self-improvement side of things. And it was just really nice to read a book that is very much kind of talking about, as I said, the soft skills, human skills, things that we maybe don't do. And I think it's fascinating to hear the AI angle, which I'd not really thought of, that I guess to a lot of people, there's a comfort that comes with doing repetitive tasks, you know, big, complicated, repetitive tasks that it's actually too difficult to explain to anyone else, so you can do it. But very quickly, if it can be easily repeated, you're kind of out of a job.
Yeah, well, that's it. A lot of people, well, the thing is, there is a lot to say that there will be a lot of jobs lost, but that doesn't mean people will be out of job. It means there'll be different jobs. There's a lot of opportunity coming, and that's why it's important to be ready for that. And you're going to need human skills. You're going to need some tech skills too. Don't get me wrong. We're not getting rid of all the tech skills, but you're going to need those human skills if you want to make the most of those opportunities.
Yeah, it's interesting. You also mentioned I've got to the point, growth mindset is one thing I really wanted to talk to you about, which is
amazing.
I'll be honest, it's a relatively new concept to me. Even though I think if you've read a lot of some, you know, really great books, that it's a concept that I'm kind of fascinated by. And it's one thing. Why don't you explain the idea of growth mindset?
Well, I wish it was mine. It's not mine. It comes from a lady called Carol Dweck, who did some amazing research. And originally it was all done to help children, because there was all this research done about how, and there's lots of research done about the brain, about how the brain actually grows and how it grows and what creates those new pathways to be created. And a lot of it is to do with failure, making mistakes. When we fail at mistakes, we grow up. Actually, physically, our brain gets bigger, believe it or not. So we have a mantra actually in our training: fail fast, learn fast. And because the quicker you fail, the quicker you're going to learn. But the growth mindset is power of not yet. So it's not about how talented you are. You can be talented, but if you don't work at it, you won't be successful. It's about taking any talent you have and working hard at it. But also, you can do anything if you work hard at it. And I know people out there will be thinking, yeah, right, but I couldn't run a sprint as quick as a world champion. Well, no, of course you can't. I mean, obviously, there is different types of physiques, but you could run pretty quick if you worked at it. There's lots of things like learning a language, learning an instrument, learning to sing. All of these things we can do if we work at it. And that's what the theory is all about. So it's about the power of not yet. So not yet, but I'll keep at it. I'll give you an example, something a bit silly. I decided that during lockdown I needed to do exercise and I was getting bored. So I bought myself a weighted hula hoop. Well, honestly, I couldn't do hula hoops when I was a kid, or so I told myself. So I bought this weighted hula hoop, and 2 weeks later I was covered in bruises and I still couldn't keep it going around my waist for more than 2 seconds. But I was determined to prove this theory that works, this not yet theory. So I kept that. Now, honestly, I can keep that hula hoop going round and round and round and round and round for hours if I wanted to. And it really is about just not giving up and doing a little bit at a time and getting better.
I think that's what's really stuck in my head is So this idea of growth mindset. So as I was reading the book, because I was very fortunate you sent me an advanced copy almost a month ago, which I've been loving reading. And I just like that I get stuff early before everyone else. but one of this idea of growth mindset, so I looked into a bit more. And I don't know if you've read James Clear's Atomic Habits, but it kind of, this idea of little and often is part of the growth mindset. So So my weakness was always like, how will I ever get, and then would suggest something miles away in the horizon, you know, like I'll never get to that, and then leave it at that and not try and break it down into incremental steps. So one of the things that kind of stuck in my head was, he was like, going to the gym, the habit isn't to spend an hour in the gym. The habit you want to build is just get in the car with your gym stuff on, and then everything else, like, so it's really just down to 1 minute. And it's this idea of having a kind of positive mindset as well as a growth mindset of like hundreds of little things change your everyday behavior. And I think there's a really cool, the cool part, the thing I like about the book as well, is the second half is a masterclass. So it's part of what I'm about to enter into now, which is you mentioned in the book journaling, and it's something why didn't you mention why you think journaling's kind of important?
Oh, journaling is an amazing thing because, you know, it's very important. Part of a growth mindset is being able to reflect on your mistakes or reflect on your learning, your growth. So having a journal means that you can use that to sort of do what we call written reflection. And actually, it's interesting because you can do it. You can do journaling on your computer, but it's not the same. The physical thing of having a nice book and a pen and writing completely accesses a different part of the brain. It sparks up different parts of the imagination and creativity, and it makes us think differently. And having a journal means that you can constantly be in touch with yourself so that you can know how you're getting on. So it was really important to actually encourage people when they buy the book or get the book to actually have a journal alongside it.
Because journaling is something that's relatively new to me. And I've written down one of the questions I wanted to kind of say was, it's fascinating to me that I thought I need to relax in the evening, so I want to watch telly or do something, you know, like, or do something physical, like keep my, and essentially it was just like, short-term distraction until bed, you know, like it wasn't, I was actually kind of, when I made the space to sit down and do a journal, even though I've only been doing it for 5 minutes, I was like, don't try and do a half an hour every night, just do 5 minutes. Yeah. Even though I don't really know what I'm going to get out of it yet, just the process is actually weirdly more relaxing than I thought it would be, you know, to try and make sense of what you've been doing during the day.
It's a really good thing to do before bedtime. So actually, you know, there's a lot of research that says we shouldn't be looking at screens before bed because it disturbs our sleep. So if you literally turn off the TV 30 minutes before you would do normally and do a bit of journaling instead. I'm not saying you've got to do half an hour, but, you know, if you do it before bed, it really gives you a chance to actually just let everything out so that you are in a better place to go to sleep. And first thing in the morning is also really great. So often you wake up in the morning with great ideas, don't you? Lots of really great people, and I'm not saying I'm one of them, but lots of them do write journals, of course.
Yeah. And I guess it's one of those things, little habits, that after a year or two, you look back and you see all of these journals. And so how often do you reflect back? Do you give yourself, like, by Christmas, I'll have done this, and then 6 months later, you then go back to what you decided you do? Like, how long a time frame do you give yourself to reflect back?
I mean, I sort of tend to reflect on my day. I reflect on my week. I don't know that I look back that much. I don't know that I go to sort of a year and then look back on my year. I do look at the journal, but I tend to do it much more in quicker bites so that I can see things that are much more immediate. But, you know, I guess we're all different. It's different ways of doing it and whatever suits you, really. Some people do journals by, you know, drawing. They just literally draw their thoughts. You know, there's lots of different ways that you can do it. So I don't think there's a right or wrong way. Up to you, really.
So tell me a bit more about explain to people a bit more about the kind of the masterclass portion. So you mentioned it was a little bit like a gym workout, and straight away I'm like, okay, you've caught my attention.
Like a gym workout. It literally is. The analogy is the gym. So we called it the masterclass because of that reason. So you have, it's 6 weeks of exercises. So each of the five weeks of exercises. So it's each of the five skills. It has a week each. And for each day, there is a core exercise. it's obviously the analogy of the gin, which is around that the core exercises are like underpin everything. And then that underpins the day. And then you go into a sprint exercise, which is a quick exercise, not too difficult. Very, very quick hits, quick wins. And then there's a stretch exercise, which is a bit more difficult, takes you outside your comfort zone, makes you work a little bit harder, might be a little bit scary, especially if it's something like we want you to talk to a stranger. I know for some of us, that's not difficult. For some people, they're like, oh, really? And then there's a warm down where you think about what you've learned and what you might want to do tomorrow. And then it starts the next day, starts all over again. And at the end of the week, there's a check-in, like a progress, getting on the, so if you're getting on the scales or, you know, that sort of thing. And you reflect back on the week. And it goes on like that for six weeks. So it really is a workout. It's a masterclass workout for your human skills.
Yeah, that's why I like the analogy was because so one of the big things, and I think we'll come on to kind of how the pandemic has changed people's mindsets, but one of the big differences that I've done is I've actually doing a proper gym training plan, like a home gym one, which has proper, it's like 12 weeks and it has very clear things. And because I have consistency in my day, like that's one of the benefits, I have ruthless consistency. I know what I'm doing every minute of every day because I'm not leaving the house. I like that it has up bits and then it purposely gives you weeks to relax. Like you've got to relax this week. You can't like, cause yes. So the reason I'm bringing this analogy up is I don't think people are aware the brain is exactly like any other muscle. You should have peak, push, and then you should really build in a week. You're feeling tired. You've got to have a down week, like give yourself that break. Is that how you think you see that 5 week thing working?
Yeah, it's and there's a, you know, I give everybody a day off. so you have like 6 days and then you have the Sunday to just really just chill and reflect. But yeah, there's lots of, it builds in lots of thinking, lots of reflecting and lots of time. I guess a bit like when you're doing like a hit routine where you do like, you know, an exercise really intense and then you have a rest time.
And how did you come up with these? Is it like, how have you come, where do these exercises come from? Are these like a accumulation of all the other things you've been doing with the live people?
Yeah, it's a great question because absolutely. So I was talking to the marketing guy for the book the other day and he was going, you know, I was saying to him, look, you know, what's happening? It's not coming out. It's published and it's not out. And he's going, look, it's fine. Just chill. I went, look, this is my life's work. And he went really quiet for a minute because I think he suddenly thought, oh, yeah, he had. I said to him, maybe you ought to read the passage in the book about empathy. But so it is literally my life's work. It is everything I've ever learned. Every single exercise in it I've done in training or I've done myself. And and some of them are sort of things that, you know, I've done in training and some of them I've done in coaching, but they're all tried and tested, definitely.
Yeah, I think, I don't know how to make it. So creating the little exercises that purposely push you out of your comfort zone are the ones that I was least looking forward to in the days and the ones I got the most out of, because I don't know why, like the second you take your brain completely out of something you're used to doing, you go into full survival mode and your brain, I don't know, it was like a fascinating process to be put in that position.
And you know, if you stay comfortable and safe, then it's a nice feeling, but you'll never learn anything new because you are literally doing the same things. That's why it's comfortable and safe. You're only going to grow when you do something different.
As part of this kind of, I feel like the last year has been a kind of self-improvement process. I guess a lot of people have had time to really focus on all the minutiae of your life. But the one thing in the book, which I'm glad you just picked up on, was the asking for feedback from other people. I was like, oh, I liked everything else she'd said. I was like, yeah, of course I want to talk more. Yeah, that's great. I have a skill set everyone needs. And then it was like, ask for feedback about your skill set. And I was like, I don't want to ask for skill set.
You know why, Ben? Because you're a feeler like me. So because we're feelers, of course, if as a thinker, when thinkers get feedback, they process it logically up in their head. So they'll start to sort of ask questions around it. And they process it here. We process it right in our gut. So it comes into the gut and we immediately take it personally. So it's like, you know, and we have to lick our wounds a bit. But, it, you know, once we get, I mean, I had so much feedback on the book. before it was finished. I mean, I sent it to the guy that wrote the foreword, Michael Heppel, who is a very, you know, quite a well-known author and has written lots of books. He did the foreword. I sent it to him, and his feedback was, I can't tell you how brutal it was. I cried for a whole day. But you know what? The book was is so much better for it, because it really made me think and reflect. You know, a week later, I was fine. And that's what we've got to remember. Understand yourself. If you are that type of person, you've almost got to prepare yourself for that feeling and then have it. Let it wash over you. Take it in, you know, and read it a few times. Let other people read it so that they take the personal stuff out of it for you, and then start to sift through what you can that will help you to grow and learn.
I think, I guess in a way, it also makes you more secure as well, doesn't it? Because, I'm not saying that you want to surround yourself with people who give you negative feedback, but, you know, you're saying talk to the right people. Yeah. You're saying, you know, talking to the right people and getting the right type of feedback strengthens your opinion and your belief about yourself. Because I guess half the time, the reason I don't want to hear feedback is because I don't want anyone to make me not believe how my brain thinks about myself.
Sure. Well, and you know, you probably, you know, who knows yourself more than you do, but you know what, you're right, how you phrase the feedback. So for instance, let's say you do a presentation and you want to know how it went. Rather than going to say to somebody, how did I do, ask them, how did I engage, how did you see me engaging with the audience? So it's like you ask the feedback you actually want to hear. So you're still going, you still might get something that's constructive, but if you say, oh, how was the presentation? They might go, oh, you know, it's a bit long, and then, and before you know it, you're like, ooh. So ask for what you want and make sure it's forward focused. What could I do differently? What could I do differently next time that would actually improve what I did? So it becomes a positive thing as well.
It's really interesting. I guess the takeaway from that as well is that if you're not around people who you feel comfortable enough to ask for that, then you're probably not surrounding yourself with the right people.
Another whole thing, isn't there?
Yeah, which I think maybe that's why I'm more inclined to have this year of like personal growth and stuff, because I'm much more in control of who I interact with and who my team are, as opposed to, you know, when you're much younger at a big practice, you kind of get given everything and you have no control over who you're with, what project you're on or anything. So it almost seems like, why would I go through that process? Like, yes, there's hundreds of things, but I can't change that. So I guess as I get closer to being able to control my own life, I'm more inclined to want to find out how I can better that control, right?
Yeah.
It's really interesting. So are you, with the book then, I'm just fascinated at the process of writing a book. Like, it goes out, how many metrics and things do you have? Like, do you know, like, who's bought it? Like, how do you get feedback? Do you want to get feedback? Are there milestones you want to hit, or are you trying not to worry about these things?
I'm a little bit obsessed with Amazon at the moment because, of course, you know, originally the book was given a promotional spot at WH Smith Travel, because the book is actually a year late. Actually, it was supposed to come out last year, but it was delayed because of the pandemic, and it was going to go to WH Smith. And then, of course, they closed all their stores. So the only way it's really going, you really can see it selling, is going to be through the online book moment. But I'm obsessed with Amazon because you can go on Amazon and you can see where you are in all of the books. So I think I'm at the moment, I think I'm 50,025 or something silly like that. But apparently new books normally go in at about 2 million. So, you know, I think that's pretty good. And then on Friday, I was number 50 in the personal development charts. And I was like, oh my God, literally looking at it all the time, which is mad because it keeps going up and down, and it's just not a good idea. So there's all of that. But, you know, writing a book's a funny thing because obviously you're not going to get rich writing a book. And I hate to say this, but you're just not. Because if my book sells 5,000 copies, that makes it a bestseller in personal development. So bearing in mind, you know, I'm on about a 10% commission. You can start working it out.
Yeah.
It's going to make very much money. But it's not about that. For me, it was several things, really. Obviously, it helps my profile as a trainer, you know, it's a good calling card. But more than anything else, I wanted to have something that, you know, I could point people to as that sort of bank of all the things that I've ever learned in terms of how to develop those soft skills, you know. And also, it was a massive thing for me because I'm dyslexic. So I was always told I couldn't write from very early. My school teacher said to me, don't be daft. Don't do anything where you have to write. Get out there and talk, because that's what you're better at, which is what I did. So I like that challenge. So I was always pretty determined that I would one day write one. So
that's amazing that it's I guess the tip of the iceberg. You know, you think people just sit down, okay, I'm going to write a book. It made me think, actually, because I saw the word count pop up. Because so when you sent me the PDF, I could click it on my Kindle and it would automatically zap it into the Kindle as an actual Kindle book. And it I had a moment of how much effort it is, because I can't remember the word count, but it was in the tens of thousands or whatever. I remember having to edit my 15,000 word dissertation, and it killed me having to reread it and reorder it and get people to look at it. And I must have looked at it 10 times before I sent it in. And that was only 15,000 words. And I thought, something of that scale with that many people helping, that many people looking at it, you must have been, are you completely sick of it by the time you finish it? Or?
Oh, yes. When I first finished, I really missed it. I was only ever really, because I could only write at weekends because I was busy and working. I did a lot of thinking. So as my personality type is that, like you, that P, that A, so it's emerging ideas. So all the time there were things coming in, things I'd read or things people would say, and I'd research them, whatever. But I could only actually write at a weekend. And I used to just take myself off to a sort of quiet place, coffee shop, of quietness, of it being all about me and my creativity and my message, and I missed it. So now I'm thinking, what am I going to write next?
Yeah, well, I think the process of you going through that and taking all of those years of experience and collating it into a book, I'm actually really jealous that I create more. This podcast is the closest I've got to a kind of a box that I can collect all my wonderful experiences in, and then all the people I've met, and look back on it, right? And then suddenly, like, stand out as a book for you. It's like a real milestone, isn't it? It's a collection of all your experience, and you can look back and go, wow, look how much I've done. And I'm jealous.
Also different ways of communicating. And I think doing, you know, like you're saying, or your podcast, so you're creating your own story that way through people. So it's a different process, but there's definitely some similarities in it in terms of understanding people. So, yeah, I am very proud of it, I must say.
Well, I don't blame you. So, I mean, it's so across the last year then, I would love to talk to you about the mindset of people that you've been talking to over the last year, because you more than anyone will have seen that change in people's perception of face-to-face and having that time to think. I mean, have you always been doing it in teams, or do you do it one-on-one? Is it always with larger groups?
Most of what I do is larger groups, but I do coaching, one-on-one coaching. I've done more one-on-one coaching during the pandemic.
I guess especially if in the one hand you're saying growth mindset and you should think positively about all these things, and then someone goes, yeah, but I've lost my business. Like, I need to mourn that business.
Exactly. And I think the key thing is to come out of this thing and look for ways for making it a good thing, if you like, or changing the world and making it better. I mean, you know, I'm all for positivity, and I'm all for the fact that if you are able to find some good in all of this, great. And there are lots of good things, but just be careful about bragging about it too much.
Well, I think part of... Okay, so I think the reason you probably had a lot of these chats, right, is that there's a quote from your book that as an employee, we don't remember the perks like free lunches, parties and free massages. What we remember is empathy, compassion and kindness. Yeah. And actually, I feel that what this pandemic has done is it's shown the bosses and the leaders who have empathy and those who don't. And if you suddenly didn't realize your boss was maybe like that, across Zoom, you know, suddenly you're presented with quite a harsh reality that, oh, do you know what? This is not a nice relationship. And for a couple of weeks, but you can maybe handle it. But for a year, you know, and it's really stressful, I think. I know a lot of people that have not enjoyed not being in the office and have really missed having that office interaction. I think I'm definitely in the midpoint where I can appreciate there's some things that I work better at home. That quiet time, I actually get too distracted. I'm too excited by 50 million people talking, and I love it. And then, but I really miss seeing people's, having that interaction with people, it's like bonding and also makes you worry less. I'd imagine anxiety like is a much higher thing because you're just on your own. You can just spiral in your own head, can't you? Is that something that you've been kind of talking to a lot of people about?
So I was asked to write an article for, I think it was for, I've written quite a few articles, but I think it was for Forbes, just like a comment on stress and the impact of leaders on their people and the stress that it's caused in this time. And actually, you're absolutely right. It's the leaders that have not been practicing empathy, not been staying in contact, not been communicating effectively that have caused the stress. 67% of people were feeling disconnected from their work colleagues and their leaders. That's a huge, that's two-thirds, isn't it? Or three-quarters nearly of the workforce are feeling that way. But it is the people that are now forced to work at home. So yeah, absolutely. I think, I always say that, I think I said this in the book, empathy is not saying I want to, I understand. It's not saying I understand. You know, when people do that, I understand how you feel. You know, I understand you're feeling like this. That's not empathy, it's understand and asking and listening and making that contact and saying, I'm here for you. That's what real empathy is.
I couldn't agree more. I think I was interesting with our company at the beginning. I was tasked with just talking to people, you know, just because and some people, you know, had been furloughed, they weren't in very much, and just literally just ringing them and talking to them. I could have done it over email, could have done it in 5 seconds, but actually just to have that kind of, we did a stupid Spotify playlist. I made them all tell me what their favorite five songs were. I went to town and I realized, oh, okay, that's something that is really important to people, especially people who don't like being across kind of Teams and Zoom and things. We're nearing the hour mark, but there's a part that I wanted to talk to you about that I was really fascinated. Like, it's all about soft skills and in the education and school system, actually prepping children to have a growth mindset is a fascinating new way of me thinking. And I only say that because my son's five, he's just gone to school, and I realize if he is like me, that he will respond far more to situational information than being forced to just factory process information and regurgitate information. And I feel that maybe, and AI is advancing faster than schools are developing a curriculum, and it just feels like there's no way you can't argue with that statement. And yet we're still going through the same process. And my wife's massively fascinated with this as a topic as well. And I'm just curious, like, do you have any links with the education system? How did you do that portion of your book and research?
Well, I work for a very large educational company, do training for them. And and I've worked with them for a long time all over the world. And they have lots of different avenues into understanding young people and the like, and also just doing the research and the reading. But you know, Carol Dweck's research was all for children. That's what it, and that's where growth mindset comes from. It's only recently that businesses are picking up on it. In fact, the kids can probably tell you more about it than, you know, a lot of the adults. So if you talk about, not so much your son because he's quite young still, but so they might not quite have cottoned onto the idea that maybe the STEM subjects and tech and all that they should be doing those things, but maybe they ought to be doing some soft skills training as well and teaching kids to be able to talk and socialize and interact and present and all those things and inspire, tell stories, all of that. Yeah, I think they have mindset down. They are teaching that. They're teaching kids to fail. They're teaching kids that mistakes are not the end of learning, but the beginning. And they're teaching kids that they need to put effort in. So, you know, when a kid says, I'm not very good at maths, a teacher won't accept that now. They will just say, OK, you're not very good at maths yet. And that's where that power of not yet comes. So I think that's a very healthy place for the schools to be in. But I really, you know, it's funny when you hear about schools stopping, you know, drama and arts and music and focusing on the STEM subjects. And yet it's probably going to be those things in the future that actually the kids to actually get a job and to career. It's going to be so different. Your little boy, he will have a job that you've never heard of. You can't even imagine it, in fact, right now.
Yeah. I think that maybe that's why understanding more about yourself has allowed me to understand more about my kids, you know, because I have such it's very clear that I have a very similar personality to my son. It's almost impossible to ignore. So it's fascinating. I'm becoming more and more interested in the education of children than I realized. And I do think like teaching your kids to fail is such an easy thing to say to a child, but it's so difficult to say to yourself as an adult, like at work, just don't worry about failing. You're like, are you insane? I'll get fired.
Well, that's
like,
it. That's but I know. Yeah. Such a stigma to failure in the business world. And yet there is no innovation. There's no innovation without failure. And if companies don't create a failure culture, then they will end up standing still. But you, as an architect, you know, because you've probably had to put yourself out there so many times where you've failed or you've been told that your designs are not good enough or go and sort them out. You know, you've probably had a better education at failing than most people. But yeah, stigma wise, you know, you can't fail.
Yeah, because I guess for most people, success is linear, isn't it? It's just a vertical line. That's what people think it is. It never dips down. You're like, no, it's just got to continually go up and up and up. And you're like, that's not how it works. You've got to have a few off weeks, months.
Well, look at all the really successful inventors. I mean, you know, there's some really famous ones, you know. Yeah, got to remember that we should encourage our children to make mistakes, support them through it, but they need to be able to make mistakes.
So I guess we'll wrap this up now. So what's next then? I mean, I feel like I had my jab on the weekend. I feel like the world's borders, people borders in the country are slowly starting to open up. People are going to start seeing each other. Are you anticipating like a rocket fueled summer? Or
no. Do you know what I think? Possibly. I think there's a lot of anxiety around people thinking it's going to literally one minute we're going to be wearing masks and socially distancing and the next day, Freedom Day. And I think there's quite a lot of anxiety around that. Even I can feel it myself because I had my first inquiry about a face-to-face course last week and I freaked out and I went, really, you really want to do it face-to-face? And he went, well, yeah, because I don't think we could, it's definitely got to be face-to-face. And I was like, I almost heard myself trying to talk him out of it. So I think got to get over that. But no, I actually think there might be a bit more balance between this and face-to-face. So I think I'll do a bit of both. But I don't know whether it's suddenly going to go bang and we're all going to go nuts. What do you think?
I honestly can't tell. I my only glimmer is I went to a coffee shop. Maybe I had to go to the dentist in London, which is allowed. And I went to a coffee shop afterwards and the guy said he works in the hospitality industry. And he said every single beer garden and restaurant with any outdoor space is basically fully booked for the next 6 months. Like,
there you London. Are. That is going to go bad. We're all going to go pop.
Yeah. And I just think maybe for that first week, but I'm like you, I'm like, I guess it's been a year. I've got used to this way of life. This is the normal now. So irrelevant of if you were used to it, how often do you ever have a year off the whole world doing anything? You know, it's just,
they call it the great pause.
I think that's definitely a good way to end that podcast on the great pause. But thank you so much for talking to me. I really enjoyed that.
I really enjoyed it too.
There you go. That was episode 29 of the Create More podcast with Deborah Stevens. Her book stand out. You should read it. 5 Key Skills to Advance Your Career. It's out on Amazon to get now. It's really good. And the kind of, I'm only in week one of all the kind of masterclass at the end. I've started doing a journal and genuinely found it really, really interesting. So if you've learned anything from this, I really hope you get into that book. And on next week's podcast, I am very excited. It's not been fully confirmed, but Tom Buck is a podcaster, but the important thing is he's in America and I'm going to say he's like a mirror version of me. So I'm really excited to talk to him. He has a great podcast all about how to do podcasts. And I think he's a teacher as well. Anyway, I'm excited to do my first international recording. So I'm excited to do that. So click subscribe and I hope you enjoyed it. If you want to get into contact with me, go to www.createmorepodcasts.com and go on the about page. Thanks so much for listening. Bye.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.